So if I haven't met you before, I'm Christina Height, and I work here at the church part-time. I do our community outreach efforts. So practically, that looks like running our breakfast club on Sunday mornings, overseeing the community garden, doing whatever we do at the summer food program, any partnerships in our city. So that's kind of what my role is here, if you've ever wondered, like, why does she get an office? So, all right, let's get into it. So Dustin and I accidentally had the local news on the other night. I never really watch the news, and neither does Dustin, and we try to keep up with what's going on in the world from various online sources. And by that, I mean, I just get on Facebook, and then I see what everyone's talking about. Then I go look it up. So, but sometimes I do watch CNN when I'm running at the gym. And I also like ESPN, if that counts as news. So this particular evening, in a matter of minutes, there were literally 8 stories in a row about shootings. Just random, like really quick. It was none of the major stuff we've heard about. And the one that caught our eye was one that happened in Decatur, where Dustin and I went to school. And so for some reason, we kept it on. And then we just kept just in awe, just thinking, like, why are they keep, what's there another one? There's just another one. So we just story after story of violence. I finally just turned it off because we're able to. And with the click of a button, I could shut out the outside world and get back into what I really wanted to talk to Dustin about, which was trying to figure out what Pokemon Go was all about. This is like, you know, a week ago. So, and I still don't actually understand it, and I probably won't. But so as I was preparing this week, that moment stuck with me. I'm not sure what it would be like to watch the news every night, but I imagine it would be really depressing. And I know myself well enough to know that I have to choose the speed and the frequency at which I hear about the devastating events in our world. It's just too much. And that is privilege, I know. And at the same time, it's self-care and it's very purposeful. And too much exposure can lead me to desensitization and apathy. And so that's just sort of the way that I run it. Several years ago, Dustin and I attended a conference in Atlanta, and it was for church leaders, and I hadn't been to a lot of conferences before, but this one was particularly interesting to me. Of course, they had their good stuff about like how to lead people and how to inspire your volunteers and all of that stuff, but they did a really good job of highlighting organizations and people around the world who are making a difference. And so they'd give these 10 to 15 minute spotlights just about stuff I'd never heard about, and part of that was I was just in my early 20s and very self-absorbed and didn't know what was going on. And part of it is just there's just so much good that it's sometimes hard to keep up with the ways to get involved. So I remember hearing about the founder of Charity Water, which is an organization that he started after being exposed to the water crisis in the world, that there were at that time 1 billion people living without clean water. And so he kind of gave up his job as some sort of like celebrity, I don't know what he did. I think he did like marketing with celebrities in some way. So he had all these connections and gave up his job and just turned over to a nonprofit organization and used his influence in that world to get celebrities to come behind getting clean water to people. And then I remember hearing about a human trafficking survivor, and she was bravely telling her story and bringing attention to the fact that there are 136 million people who are estimated to be enslaved at that point. And then I remember hearing a really cool experience about Compassion International, which many of you may be familiar with. It's a sponsorship program is one of the main things they do. And they work in all kinds of countries all over the world. And so the interviewer was up there with a man from Nigeria, and he had come to the United States to pursue his master's in divinity. Can't remember where he got his college degree, but from Nigeria. And he's talking about how he was sponsored as a child. He was in Nigeria sponsored, and he had built this amazing relationship with his sponsor through letter writing and just telling the story. And it was really moving. And you could tell that this man, his whole trajectory of his life had been changed from this one person who believed in him and told him that over and over and over again in the midst of what he was going through. Like, I believe in you. God is with you. That kind of stuff. And then, of course, as a good conference does, the interviewer says, we have a surprise for you. And they brought the man out who had sponsored him. And it was this beautiful, I mean, the Nigerian man just fell to his knees and was sobbing. And the whole place is just, I mean, there's not dry eye in the room. It was just a beautiful moment of seeing how $38 a month changed this man's life and was going to therefore change all the lives of the people that he came into contact in ministry. So I'll never forget that. And we actually picked up that same day. I was like, oh, there's so many good things to do. What should we do? So we grabbed 3 packets of kids to sponsor and took it back to our small group and told them all that's what they were going to be doing. And so that's one way you lead, right? You just tell people, this is now what we're doing. So what do you do with all the information and all the statistics and all of the sadness and all of the atrocity and marginalization and oppression in our world? What do you do? Is it paralysis? Is it overexertion? Is it praying someone else does something about it? I think I did a little of all three. And what I didn't realize was that I was starting a season of my life in which I would continue to be exposed to not only the world's deep, deep problems, but the world's amazing people who are thoughtful, active, and caring. And everywhere I looked, I seemed to run into another way to make a difference. The possibilities of where to invest my time and my money and my resources were endless. And I didn't know what to do, so I just started to take a couple steps forward. We were working at another church at the time, and so we launched a summer of service, and what it ended up being was just coordinating ways, really simple ways, for our church to be exposed to some of the issues in that particular city, which was Tulsa at the time. So we served meals at the Salvation Army, and we passed out groceries at a food pantry, and we visited nursing homes, and none of it was really super huge or important in the grand scheme of things, maybe, but really what it was doing is giving people opportunities to say, hey, there's stuff going on right here. Why don't you just take a little step forward? And I, myself, continued to expose myself to the hard stuff in the world and to talk to other people who were doing good things. I read books, I talked with local leaders, and I did my best to share what I was learning with others. I was kind of all over the place, as I said, until I ran into an organization called the 111 Project. It's a foster care initiative launched in Oklahoma, and the whole concept is 111. So let me see if I get this right. So if every church had one family to take on one foster child in the church in the state of Oklahoma, you would easily eradicate the need for placements because there were 8,000 kids in care at that point. The number has now grown to 11,000, so that's kind of unfortunate since they started a project and it's the numbers are rising. But for whatever reason, Oklahoma, I think the rural poverty and a lot of the cycles that happen in broken families are really prevalent there. And you'd think that churches would be super active. It's the Bible Belt. It's Oklahoma. Like, woohoo! But no. So people just weren't exposed. And this project really spoke to me for whatever reason. At the same time, a family in our church who had two little girls who were 2 and 3 got a call from an Iowa state agency that said, hey, your nieces, who you've really never met, are being removed from their home. And I know you don't know them, and you don't have any relationship with your brother who's supposed to be caring for them, but would you take them? We're calling all the family to see if there's a kinship placement. And I remember her sending this Facebook message to a group of women she was close to. And I was coming at it from a therapist perspective at the time. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're going to upset the birth order. I didn't know a lot about foster care. You're going to upset the birth order. You're going to bring in kids you've never met. I mean, there are a lot of things to be worried about. And then, like the good, I guess, minister I was at the time, I said, but if God is asking you to do it, then do it. Like, people will support you. So they did. They took a leap. And we got to watch that process unfold. They brought in a 4 and 5-year-old to add to their 2 and 3-year-old. And they were such a cute family. So as I read the statistics and then I heard their story, and then I kept leaning into Jesus' teachings about how to serve the least of these, I just felt compelled to dive deeper. So we became aunt and uncle to that girl, unofficially. And we babysat for their date nights. We basically just walked alongside them like you do with any friends, but very purposefully and finding the ways that would matter to them the most. And so we watched their kids so that they could go to small group every week and not feel isolated. And when their 5-year-old decided to swallow a penny, we met them at the hospital so that one of them could stay home with their other kids. And for the next year and a half, Chastity always said to me, you're the ones who came to the hospital when I swallowed a penny. It was like, that was so significant in her life that we were there. So we just did whatever they needed, help with house projects or whatever. And now that I had been exposed and I had been experienced a little bit in the area, we were really engaging. And we began to learn that foster care was kind of our thing. It is our thing. And so just little baby steps led us there. And there's something to be said, obviously, for doing good wherever you are, for just being the kind of person that Jesus wants you to be, for treating people wherever you are with love and dignity and respect, and for loving your family well. There's other steps you can take, really small stuff, like being aware of where you shop. How do you combat human trafficking? Well, I try to buy fair trade chocolate at Hy-Vee. And I try not to shop at whatever stores are not ethically sourcing their clothing. And it's hard. It's little things, but I feel like I can do those little things. And so little things are good. But then there's also truth that there's importance in finding your thing. And our church gives some opportunities for that, to be exposed to the places in our community and our world that just isn't set right yet. And we brought a guest speaker in to talk about human trafficking, and we host a breakfast every week where you can learn about what homelessness looks like in Oklahoma. In Peoria. Hello. And it probably looks pretty similar, actually, across the board. So we talked about the need for summer meals for kids who normally would get a free lunch on their weekdays, and now out in the summer they don't have food. We talked about that. We talked about how it was important to start a community garden so that, because we're placed in a food desert, people would have access to fresh food at a reasonable cost, which is nothing. So there are ways to be exposed to this stuff. We have participated in interfaith discussions. We go to Honduras and we make an ongoing impact there. We are an active online community, and I feel like I'm constantly being exposed to the things people are passionate about and sharing online, and good articles that I just save for later because it's too much at the same time. But all the exposure is just a step. It's just a toe in the water, and sharing an article is good and needed and definitely has its place. But so does experiencing the situation, and so does sitting with someone and listening to their story. And I believe wholeheartedly that God works in our everyday lives, and he's asking us to take steps forward, to find ways to dive deeper into injustice that spark a fire in our soul, to learn and listen and lean in and to love. And there may be moments in your life where you've experienced warmth in your heart, and where you feel about a situation, or maybe there's a deep frustration that you're experiencing. And maybe those things are meant to drive us to action. Lean into those moments. Take a step forward, whether it's something that our church is involved in or something else in our world that you've been exposed to and experienced. What does it look like to really engage in that area? And take some time to lean into your own story. Are there threads that God has been weaving together, calling you to a life beyond yourself? The things you've seen and the places you've been, the family you're from, the stories you just can't shake, and the books that you remember, do they overlap in some way? Is it possible that God is calling you to that area? Or are there moments, really specific times, in which you know God was there? Moments where his beauty was a little bit more obvious, or his goodness was a little bit more clear? Are there particular areas of our city or of our world that you just feel drawn to? I think all of these little ways are his way of telling us, there, that thing, that cause, those people. Will everyone have one specific thing that's their cause, their calling, their big hurrah? Probably not. But I do think it's worth it to pause, allow ourselves to explore if there might be, that some of these situations are going to be changed by a lot of people doing a little bit. And some of these situations are going to be changed by a few people deeply diving into the thing God called them to, investing a lot, engaging a lot, and giving their life to it. What an honor to be able to partner with God as he sets things right.
Thank you for sharing, Christina. Next up, we have Carolyn Gunn, who leads our Celebrate Recovery ministry. If you've not met her, you really need to. She's a heart of gold.
Thank you, Dustin. Hi, I'm Carolyn. I'm a Christ follower who struggles with alcohol and codependency, anxiety, fear, and injustice. Hi, Carolyn. Okay, so I really enjoy overseeing Celebrate Recovery, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. I was raised in a Christian home, and I'm very thankful to my parents for that opportunity to know Christ at an early age, and that was a beautiful thing. And I noticed a pattern, though, as I became older, that I became involved in unhealthy relationships. There was a propensity for me to become an alcoholic because of the history of my family. And I didn't really know that at that time. And I got involved in broadcasting, and I got involved in all kinds of things that I shouldn't get into. But then I got married, and I got married to an emotionally and verbally and financially abusive man. But the best thing about that is I had two children who I'm crazy about, and they're funny and they make me laugh. And so, in that midst of that, I got my master's degree in counseling, became licensed, and I got a job at my church, which was Northwoods Community Church, and I worked there for 16 years. And in that, I started Celebrate Recovery and ran that for 13 years, loved it. I had a great group of volunteers who, they're still with me, and I still care about them. I still have a relationship with them. And I did some other groups. I did Grief Share. I did divorce care for kids, teen divorce. I did a lot of different search for significance and all these programs that I oversaw. And I did counseling, too, on the side, Christian pastoral counseling, which was really awesome for me. And it was nice because I could provide that counseling at free of charge as part of the church. Well, Celebrate Recovery was growing and enjoyed that, had leadership with them and did some training and, cared for them the best way I could. And then unfortunately I went through a divorce in 2011. I began that process, unfortunately. And in December 9th, of 2014, I was asked to leave Northwoods Community Church. They said they were eliminating my position. I was pretty devastated by that. And I was also facing some medical concerns that was pretty devastating, too. That worked out okay. And so here I was looking at finding a job and trying to get my kids through college because I'm court mandated to pay for half of my children's college. And so it was devastating, and I didn't come to church for about a year or so because I still love Jesus. I still love Jesus, and I still loved all the people that were in my life. I didn't love the institution of church. And it was interesting. When I was at Northwoods Celebrate Recovery, we would have at one time they had 13 pastors on staff, and I would ask pastors to come and speak at Celebrate Recovery. But there was always one pastor there that I never had to ask. I never had to ask him because he came. And so when can I speak at Celebrate Recovery? And that didn't happen. Okay, I had to beg, please. And that was Charlie Dean. Charlie would come and say, when can I speak at Celebrate Recovery? And he was the only one that did that. And I thought, well, I need to check out his church because I had heard about his church and where he was having church services. And so I just prayed about it and asked God. And so I came to Imago. And when I went up to him, he just gave me this big hug and said, I'm so glad to see you. How are you? And so that was very nice. That was wonderful. In the midst of that, I became an addiction counselor at the Addiction Center, Recovery Center at Proctor. And that was it's a very hard job. It's a very hard job. And I really love my patients. I want them all to succeed. Right now I have 37 patients, and I care about all of them. And in the midst of that, I had a meeting with Dustin and Charlie and I think even Steve, poor thing. And I had to, I asked him, I'm like, I'd like to start a Celebrate Recovery. What do you think? And so we went through that process and very exciting. And we started Celebrate Recovery on April 1st. Okay, not because we're fools, but because we need Jesus. And so Celebrate Recovery is part of this organization, this church, and we love it. So every Friday night we meet at 6 o'clock. We have a very, very simple dinner, which I love. And then we have a message or a testimony at 6:30. We have free child care. And then from 7:30 to 8:30, we have support groups focusing on addiction and codependency. There was a point in my life where Jesus said, I don't want you to drink anymore. He said, no, because I am an alcoholic. And he also said to me, I don't want you to be involved in unhealthy relationships. You know, how can you serve me if you're not healthy? And so I don't make a judgment about other people's relationships. I don't make judgments about other people's drinking. I'm not a person that says you cannot drink. I'm saying that he's saying to me, I cannot drink because I'm an alcoholic. and that's my relationship with Him. So I have two focuses in my life. I want to serve God, and I want to serve others. And it's not my job to judge anyone. If someone comes to me and says, hey, I'm an alcoholic, then I can talk to them about Celebrate Recovery or whatever resources there are available. So that's what happened to me, and that was important. And, you know, I have worked really hard. I kind of grew up with kind of a judgmental attitude, and I don't want to be that way. So back to Celebrate Recovery. So 7:30 to 8:30, we have support groups for codependency and chemical. They're separated out, male and female, which is kind of nice because we can just be very candid. And someone just told me recently, it's like, what are you doing? You're laughing. What is happening? You know, that it, yeah, we do talk about our pain and we talk about our struggle, but there is a lot of joy and a lot of laughter. And we do need volunteers. We need volunteers for food. We need maybe one or two people to come, and we have a generous benefactor who has food, and we just need somebody to serve it and clean it up just on the ledge there in the kitchen. And we look for people to serve once a month. So we are looking for people to help us, but it's more than that. We're looking for people that we can learn about and know about and to love. And so that's really what we're all about. Celebrate Recovery is a 12-step program that embraces Jesus Christ as our higher power. It comes from Rick Warren's church at Saddleback Church in California. I've gone to the training, and that's been great. And so that it's really designed to be a safe place for you to talk about your feelings, whatever those feelings are. We're not going to tell you you're wrong. We're not going to counsel you. We just want you to have that safe place for you to process some of these difficult things. And we pray. And I pray for the program, I pray for this church, and I pray for everyone that is involved with Celebrate Recovery. And it's really small right now, and we only have two groups. We have a men's group and a women's group. And so we mix the codependency and the chemical addiction group together, and that's okay. And so that's really what I'm about. And I have had healing because of the losses that in my life, not because of anything that I've done, but because of what God has done with me and through me. And so that's really my story.
Thank you. You're awesome. Thank you for sharing, Carolyn. I think it was that day when she was asking, like, hey, can we have a Celebrate Recovery ministry here? She said that there have been several people that have come with just an utter hopelessness. One person that said if they had not, they had decided they were going to commit suicide that day, and they decided they were going to do it after the meeting, after the Celebrate Recovery meeting. And then because of that, I don't know if they shared that during the group time or what, but somehow someone convinced them not to go through with it. So anyway, we cherish that ministry. And if while she was talking, your interest was piqued, then by all means, please go talk with her and find out more.